Find a collection site near you at DEATakeBack.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent prescription drug misuse before it starts. That's DEATakeBack.com.
Need some extra cash? Peter Franklin Jewelers will pay you top dollar for your older broken jewelry. They buy gold, diamonds, and more. Visit one of their four locations and trade your unwanted jewelry for cash. Visit PeterFranklin.com. Peter Franklin, stay sparkly.
This is your 1380 The Fan Local Sports Update. I'm Adam Lundy. DeForest Buckner's two-year extension reduced his 2024 base salary and added two voidable years to the end of his contract, allowing the Indianapolis Colts to roughly double the amount of salary cap space they have on hand. Indianapolis now has $29 million available in cap space, the eighth most in the NFL. The NBA's play-in tournament continues tonight. The 76ers will take on the Heat, with the winner taking on the second-seed New York Knicks as the seventh seed. The loser of that game will face the winner between the Atlanta Hawks and Chicago Bulls, who also play tonight for a chance to be the eighth seed in a first-round matchup against the Boston Celtics. And the Fort Wayne Tin Caps three-game winning streak was ended last night on the road in Dayton, Ohio by the Dragons. You can hear the Tin Caps try to even the series against the Dragons tonight right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Pre-game at 6:45, first pitch at 7:05. For 1380 The Fan, I'm Adam Lundy.
Live from the Hoopy Insurance Services Studios, this is WKJG 1380 AM, 100.9 FM, The Fan, Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's time, Fort Wayne, your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Awesome. Older than one.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur?
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
To take you over the hump on a Wednesday. It is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. 46862. Coming up this hour, we talk to Shane Alberani. Coming up in about 15 minutes, of course, the Comets wrapped up the regular season over the weekend. Coming up tomorrow night, it's the annual fan jersey auction. We'll talk to Shane about all the details of the season that was and the plans for tomorrow night coming up at about 5:20. And then at 5:30, it will be Kent Sterling. He's going to join us. We'll talk plenty of topics with Kent Sterling, including the Hoosiers, the Colts, the NBA, the NFL draft. I don't know. We'll just throw whatever we got at him. And Kent Sterling will always come up with the answers. Always a great guest.
Yeah.
Our favorite guest, by the way.
Your favorite.
Yeah, he's coming up at about 5:30. Once again, 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. All right, so last night the Tin Caps didn't get things done offensively, just not enough hitting. But there's plenty of progress with some of the former Tin Caps, the Padres. Up until today, they lost 1-0 to the Milwaukee Brewers. Unfortunately, the Brew Crew, or I guess fortunately if you're a Brewers fan, but a run in the bottom of the eighth inning by the Milwaukee Brewers led them to a 1-0 win over the Padres in Milwaukee, wrapping up the series. And the Padres now get to return home. They'll play next on Friday night against the Toronto Blue Jays. But a couple of former Tin Caps have been doing quite well at the show. One is not unexpected. Fernando Tatis Jr.'s had a pretty good run as the Padres had won 6 of 8 going into the game today. And Tatis, 10 of 32 during that stretch. He was 3 for 4 and scored twice last night in the game that the Padres won over the Brew Crew. And then Jackson Merrill. He has done well. He got the night off last night prior to the day game today, and Merrill was over that last eight-game stretch, was 10 of 29, hitting well over over 300 during that stretch. 333 is average now for the season for Jackson Merrill. What a job he has done. It's just amazing to think that the guy was here for about half a season last year, and now he's playing in a Padres uniform daily and contributing a significant part of the Padres' early season success, not only at the plate, but what he's doing defensively. And it's not a place that he played defensively a year ago. He had to learn a whole new position. He had to move from the infield to the outfield. This isn't a move like from short to third or from short to second. Mm-hmm. He goes to the outfield and then takes on the toughest outfield position out in center field, where depth perception is almost a handicap out in center field. You've got to, it's instincts. You got to tell how it comes off the bat. You got to, listen for the sound. And it's just a different position than the corner outfield positions. And Jackson Merrill's done a terrific job, made that diving catch the other day to save a win against the Dodgers. It's been a terrific run for Merrill. But to think you and I were sitting just before the season started a year ago on the concourse, mm-hmm. on a Meet the Team event, just having a conversation with Jackson Merrill. What was he, 19 at the time?
Yeah, definitely. It was really nice to have a conversation between you and Merrill on the show. Nice interview that you gave with him. And then just less than a year later, it feels like he's right up there with the Padres. So
yeah, and it's pretty cool to see. Caitlin Clark, by the way, she was involved in her introductory press conference down in Indianapolis at Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
As she got a chance to put on the Fever jersey officially for the first time. But, she talked about the WNBA, just how competitive it has become. And she said, with only 12 teams, every team has stars. There's always going to be players that you've got to prepare for. There's no nights off. And again, it made me think about the subject we had yesterday, Adam, when I was saying that the WNBA certainly has a problem in the fact that they don't have enough spots for the amount of talent that is coming out of the women's game from college basketball and from overseas when you combine it. Adding a round to the draft doesn't help anybody, because now you're drafting 36 players into a league that has 144 total roster spots. And so there's just not room.
Right.
Probably half of the players that were drafted are not going to make the league. And so it doesn't make sense that if you're going to have small rosters and only 12 teams, that you're drafting that many players to come into the league. There's no place to put them if you have to release them. There's not a development league like there is in the NBA. And that's why I said yesterday, step number one for the WNBA has to be expanded rosters with roster spots available for, quote, development players. And you could call them development roster spots, where you can keep maybe two or three players that you are practicing with, that can travel to games. I don't even care if they dress for games, but they're not in the book and they're not eligible to actually play unless you activate them. And you can only activate them if you have a reason to have an open roster spot. So let's say, somebody gets hurt, somebody's sick, somebody, for some reason isn't available to play, that you could take one of your development players and move them and slot them in. But it also just allows more women to be part of the game. And I think that added depth doesn't hurt a thing. And then the second part of it is you've also got to expand and bring in more teams. There's too much talent to try to compress them into just 12 teams at the WNBA.
Well, fortunately, you and the league commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, are on the same page. She did talk about expansion ahead of the draft on Monday. She said that the WNBA will consider Philadelphia, Toronto, Portland, Nashville, and South Florida as locations for expansion teams. Denver, among other cities and regions, will also be considered. She said the WNBA has a goal of adding a new team by 2026 and wants to reach 16 by 2028.
That would add four teams, but then also I still think the lack of a developmental league needs to be addressed with the rosters. And you can create a development program by getting those extra two or three spots.
Absolutely.
And, you know, first of all, the only other option to the women, I don't think there's summer leagues over in Europe. I think they have to play in the fall and winter if they go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, it's not like taking a development spot is going to cost them a season of playing basketball. So to me, it's an advantage to the player. It's an advantage to the team. I think it's good for the league. They just need to expand. But Caitlin Clark addressed the idea that that right now you can go through roster after roster, and so many of them have one, two, or three superstars. It's across the board just how challenging it is. I mean, they asked her a lot of good questions about, you know, carrying the weight that she's carrying as far as right now being the face of women's basketball and, mm-hmm. and perhaps coming into the league and already inheriting the face of an entire league and what it means. I think the question was prefaced by saying, every time I turn on the TV, you're on it. You know, whether it's a commercial, whether it's a game, or whether it's Saturday Night Live, you're everywhere. I think we felt that way about Peyton Manning for a while, mm-hmm. that it was like every commercial, Saturday Night Live, he's hosting it. He's playing football on Sundays. but no, they asked her about that pressure. And, you know, she seems like a very grounded individual that doesn't get caught up in that. And really, very refreshing to hear a star athlete that spoke about, you know, her Midwest roots and about somewhat the humility where she's willing to ask a lot of questions her rookie season. She says, I don't know all the answers. I'm going to be leaning a lot on the players that I'm surrounded by. She talked about trying to develop a relationship with Aaliyah Boston to be able to get some advice on what it's like to be a number one pick and the expectations that you're going to face, all of that. So pretty good introductory press conference today out of Caitlin Clark. Also, here's a question. We talked about Bill Belichick and the situation in Atlanta, which mm-hmm. one reporter said that Robert Kraft reportedly tarnished Belichick's candidacy in Atlanta by talking to Arthur Blank, the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, and telling him some things that kind of scared him away of Bill Belichick getting that job. Bill Belichick does want to coach again. He's made that clear. But here's the question. Do you believe Bill Belichick is ever going to coach? Because there's one part of it, which is somebody that may have said something that could have made an owner a little leery, whether they, you know, said the report was that something about trusting them and their character. But the other part of it is, in the NFL, owners are desperate to find a winning combination. And you know, every year there's going to be five, six, maybe seven teams that are going to be looking for coaches. And already there's speculation on who some of those teams will be. And Bill Belichick's already got his name in the hat. He's first in line. Expecting the store to open at the New York Giants or in Philadelphia with the Eagles or in Dallas with the Cowboys. He's already said those are three places he would love to coach. Will he coach again? Yes or no? 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to have Shane Alberani. Comets, unfortunately, had a short end to their season, not making it into the playoffs. It's something that doesn't happen often, but how does that change things now with the offseason? We'll find out. Shane Alberani talking about not only the season, but tomorrow's big jersey auction. That comes up next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. So the NBA did release the start times for the series between the Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks, and game one is Sunday at 7 o'clock at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. That will be on TNT, and then game two on NBA TV, where the Pacers will play the Bucks in Milwaukee. That'll be on Tuesday, April 23rd, a week from yesterday. That'll be an 8:30 start. But then game three moves to Indiana, and the Pacers will host a playoff game at Gainbridge Fieldhouse for the first time since 2019. and they'll start at 5:30 p.m. on a Friday. A Friday at 5:30 p.m. That is also day two of the NFL draft. And ESPN trying to get in three games in one night, so they start the Pacers game at 5:30 in downtown Indianapolis. All right, we've got to talk Comet hockey, and it's not playoff talk, it's end-of-season talk, and that's not the one we expected to have this week, but joining us right now on our guest line is the voice of the Comets, Shane Alberani. Shane, not the conversation I was hoping to have with you this week.
Yeah, no, it's disappointing, but, you know, if you're missing the playoffs once every decade, which is what the Comets do, you know, they've only missed the playoffs twice since 2002. And a remarkable stat, Brett, that I had to look up, that since 1977, the Comets have had four losing seasons. It's remarkable. You know, only four times the Comets have finished below 500 since 1977. It's crazy. So,
well, I'm still working on the math from 77. So, you got to let me catch up. That would be about 47 years, 47 yeah. seasons, four losing ones.
That's crazy. You know what? We're disappointed, but you know what? It happens. And, you know, you just have to look forward to next season. And really, you know, when you really break down the season, you know, the Comets only missed the playoffs by 2 points. So really, honestly, two goals. Because you go back, the Comets lost seven overtime games, I think, this year. So you score two more goals in this season, and you're in the playoffs. And when you look at how the divisions were stacked up this year, the Comets had 77 points. They had 75 last year, and that was good enough to get them in the playoffs in the Central Division. This year, it wasn't good enough. And when you look at, you know, the Western or the Mountain Division, they had two teams make the playoffs that were sub-500. And you look at the South Division, where South Carolina had a winning percentage of 590 and didn't get into the playoffs. So it shows you that the South and the Central are probably the two best divisions in the league. So 77 points and missing the playoffs, nothing to be ashamed of when you look at the big picture.
When you look at the season as a whole, is there anything that stands out that defined the team this year?
Yeah, it was just a young group. You know, you were learning on the job. You know, Coach Jesse Kalicki, you know, he came into it obviously late in the recruiting process. You know, he picked up, you know, Tristan Ashbrooks, who we actually had to cut, and he ended up leading Adirondack in scoring after he was picked up, and that team is the number one seed in the North Division. And Joe Nardi was a guy who we had to trade because we just had so many contracted guys get sent down to us. Nardi led Redding in scoring this year, but we had so many contracted guys from Bakersfield and Edmonton get sent down right before training camp. So we had no choice but to move these guys because the contracted guys, they have to play unless they are injured. Mm-hmm. So there just wasn't going to be room on the roster. So Coach Jesse, unfortunately, you know, his roster was pretty much halfway determined by the affiliate just right before the season started. So any plan that he had kind of went out the window. And of course, Jesse was learning a lot. You know, he was learning a new division. He's a young coach and he was learning on the job as well. So man, you take all of that into the equation. It really was a pretty good year.
Shane, how do the contracts work? I know there's the AHL contracts, the contracted guys with the AHL that the Comets might have playing here. I don't know if those are all one-year deals. Is there anybody that might be already under contract for next year?
You know, Jake Chiasson, he was an Edmonton contract, so was Carl Berglund. Those two guys were on NHL contracts, and so was Ryan Fanti. I believe Berglund and Chiasson, I believe those were their multiple-year deals, where everybody else is essentially a one-year deal. We don't know what the makeup is going to be come next season. Right now, it's so early in the process, obviously. But I think, you know, if some of those guys, you know, like a Jake Johnson or Noah Gansky, who doesn't get signed by Bakersfield, you know, we'd love to have them back.
When did those conversations take place? I know normally it's a tighter window during the offseason because the Comets extend somewhere into the playoffs. So you've got this broad window of offseason, but how do you attack it? When do you start finding out, okay, the guys that have an interest in coming back, we want to make decisions on these guys? And is there any kind of a roster that has to be submitted where you retain rights over a certain period?
Yeah, you'll have an end of season roster where you'll keep those rights of those guys. You know, they'll be we'll lose some guys to Europe. Obviously, that is normal. But if they go to Europe and they decide to come back here to the ECHL, they automatically have to play for the Fort Wayne Comets unless we trade them. But you know, I believe the signing period begins the end of June, so that's when you'll start seeing all this happen, and it coincides with the NHL draft as well.
All right, so coming up tomorrow night, it is going to be the player jersey auction. I think, I don't know if there'll be an official announcement, but I think everybody thinks or goes into this unofficially believing that we might have seen the end of Sean Sedlowski. And to be honest, great tributes at the end of the game to kind of recognize what Sean has done, not only for the organization, but for minor league hockey.
Yeah, you know, Sid had a tremendous career. You know, 10 years here in Fort Wayne is unheard of, you know, in minor league hockey anymore. So, you know, he might be the last guy ever to do that, even in this league, to appreciate everything that he did. You know, he climbed up all the all-time rankings. You know, I think he broke the top 10 pretty much in everything, points scored, you know, games played, goals scored and assists. So, you know, he's going to be on those lists forever now, you know, when the record book is updated. So, you know, that's pretty cool. And, you know, he hasn't indicated, but, you know, obviously the writing's on the wall. You know, he's getting up there, you know, didn't play as much as he wanted this year. So, you know, again, no official announcement from him. Maybe he'll make something tomorrow during the party. But I talked to him actually for a minute today, and he is, you know, going to stay in town here for a few days and kind of figure things out. So, yeah, you know, if you miss a chance, if you've never had a chance to meet Sean or talk to him, get out to the Coliseum tomorrow.
Well, we had him on the show Monday, and I just asked, you know, first of all, he said he's leaning toward retirement, but he also said he wasn't going to give himself a timeline, that he just wanted to really take his time to decide, because he said, you know, from one part of him is telling him that this is the time to move on and take the next chapter of your life. There's another part that is just so in love with hockey, it's the toughest decision he's ever going to make to actually step away. And he said he won't leave the game, that he's going to find some role within the game, whether that's coaching, whether that's teaching players. But he's been a great guy on the air. So just hint, hint, if he's ever around and you need a sidekick up there, Shane.
well, I brought it up to him. You know, he actually did color with me a few games when he was getting over his back surgery. So he did about, oh, probably about a dozen or so games with me, you know, over the years. So, no, I mentioned that to him. Like, hey, maybe broadcasting might be a career you go down. So, yeah, no, but he's a hockey lifer. You know, yep. Whatever is next for him, it'll involve the game. So, yeah, I expect, you know, Sean, you know, he might not be playing here, but, you know, I'm guessing we will probably see him periodically. He's going to fall into that group of Comet legends who we see all the time.
Let's talk about the jerseys. They're going to be auctioned off tomorrow night. Of course, you've assumed the role as auctioneer, which are you ready for that important role?
Oh, I'm ready. I look forward to this every year.
Have you done your tongue exercises or whatever you got to do to be able to talk real fast?
Yeah, I really enjoy this. You know, last year there was a big jersey up. It was the Ryan Fanti jersey. He went ahead and put the one that he scored the goal in, and he got the fight in. And we set a record that night, $5,600 for Ryan Fanti's jersey.
Wow.
It broke the old mark of $5,500 set by Justin Hodgman when he his jersey, when he scored the triple overtime game-winning Game 7 Turner Cup clinching goal in 07. So you had that resume on that jersey. So that one went for $5,500. And I remember last year when it got to $4,000, me being the auctioneer, I'm like, we're breaking the record tonight. It's gonna happen.
Okay, we got 4,000. Looking for 5,600. Anybody?
You know, when it got to that point, I'm like, we have to break the record. And I think I probably made that announcement more than once during that auction.
Well, do you think with the Sid on his last season that what's Sid's high record for a jersey? Do you know?
Yeah. I want to say he's probably had a few that's gone over three. So with the possibility that if he does happen to maybe make an announcement tomorrow night, I think that may bring in some big dollars. But of course, we have old Diamond Hands also going to be in there as well. So I think that one will also go for a nice little chunk of change as well.
All right. So what are the details? What time is it? Who's invited? What does it cost? Give us the rundown.
It's free to everybody. We actually moved it from the Appleseed Room at the Coliseum to Expo One because we're expecting a lot of people there tomorrow. Doors open at 6:30. Again, it's free. 7 o'clock, we're going to start the bidding, and pretty much most of the team will be there. There's some guys who actually had to go home early, so the majority of the team will be there and be able to sign the jerseys and all that and get pictures and get autographs and have a good time.
It should be a good time for Comets fans to kind of put the wraps on this season and start to look forward to next year. Shane, always appreciate you, and we'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brett.
Yep, that is Shane Alberani joining us. Didn't mention anything about an appearance from Caitlin Clark, so maybe she will. You know, John and I were talking on the TinCast broadcast over the weekend that since the Colts aren't coming, we need, the Fever's got to ride the momentum, right? Maybe the Fever would like to have Caitlin Clark. Oh. And John had the perfect idea. The Caitlin Clark should come to the night where we have the tribute to the Daisies and the women's professional
women's league. Sports, yeah.
The only problem is I do believe they're playing in Las Vegas the night before. So I don't know if it's going to work exactly.
That might be a little bit of a wrench in the plans.
Yeah, check the Allegiant schedule. We'll take a break. Coming up on the other side of the timeout, we'll talk to the great Kent Sterling. We'll talk Indiana basketball, Colts football, the NFL draft, all coming up on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Adam Lundy. And, of course, you're always connected with the questions, comments, and suggestions on our Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. So many things to talk about with our next guest. Joining us from KentSterling.com on our guest line, it is Kent Sterling. And I think we're going to start with Indiana basketball. It's been, I guess you'd have to say a pretty good week so far for Mike Woodson and the Indiana Hoosiers. They pick up a couple out of the portal. Not sure that they addressed their glaring need, but they got a couple of really talented ball players, Kent.
They did, and they got their big. And Mike, as we know, Mike Woodson loves bigs, and so Umar Balo is coming to Bloomington. They didn't let him leave before he gave a commitment, and that's the way you do business. You get first on the docket in your visit. And then when the guy's teetering, maybe you throw him another bone, and all of a sudden you've got him locked down. He doesn't get to go to Louisville or anybody else he was contemplating going. And so you get his 13 points, 10 rebounds. You get his maturity. You get his ability to win. Arizona played very well in the Pac-12 during his 3 years there. And that is a really good thing for Woodson and the Hoosiers. And then you talk about the freshman from Washington State, and you look at him as a point guard who scored 15 points a game as a freshman, and you feel really good about him. He was the Pac-12 freshman of the year and a kid who really looks like he is going to be a kind of a solution at the point guard position, maybe in a way that Xavier Johnson wasn't. And that is a really good thing. So you got other guys coming, visiting. You've got a visit today with Connor Asijan, who's up in from your neck of the neck of the woods, went to East Noble, and can shoot the threes. Had some injury problems this past year. You have Elijah Malone, who's going to come to town tomorrow, who's the Peebo Francis Award winner from Grace. Up again, he's from LaGrange. And so you feel pretty good. This weekend, you've got Amari Williams and Kenan Carlisle from Stanford who are coming in for a little 500 weekend. When is it better to have a kid come to Bloomington than a little 500 weekend, for goodness sake?
Yeah, you know, here's my question, though, Kent. What's more important when you're going out and portaling? Is it just pure talent or roster construction, making sure you got the right blend of players that will mesh and play well together?
That's the question, isn't it? Because we have no idea what Miles Rice is going to look like in an Indiana jersey, how he's going to play with Umar Balo, how he could play with with Carlisle, who's rumored to be ready to commit when he gets to town this weekend. And that was the thing last year where maybe we learned our lesson, where we saw that Walker was coming in from Miami and that Sparks was coming in from Ball State, and that they were kind of aggregating talent, Miller Kopp the year before. And you think, okay, off we go. And then all of a sudden, kind of thud, those guys really don't work, and we got excited for nothing. So you would think we'd be a little bit more cautious this year. However, we tend to be really, really hopeful and sort of psychotic in our continued hope that Indiana is going to recapture the magic that it had until about 1993, 1994, and that kind of went adrift for low these 30 years. So, you know, Woodson is, I'm sure that what Woodson is telling his guys, telling his assistants, go get me the most talented guys possible, and you let me worry about them gelling into a team and developing this into a unit. And one year, it really worked well for Woodson. Another year, it didn't work so well. This year, it's got to work well, or somebody else is going to see if he can make it work well.
Where does that three-point shooting come from?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great question.
Who are they going to get? They lost Hickman. That was a big one, I thought.
Yeah, he's going to go to Cincinnati, and that's a shame. I don't know what the deal was there. It all comes down to money. I mean, you know, let's not be naive. These guys aren't playing for the glory of OIU. Umar Ballo isn't coming to Bloomington because, hey, you know what? Candy stripe pants are going to look great on me. They're slimming. And all of a sudden, NBA scouts are going to see a different looking guy because I'm wearing vertical stripes. You know, this is about cash. The rumor is that he got about $1.2 million to commit to Indiana. So a lot of this is about money. And Indiana's got deep pockets. The NIL collectives that Indiana's put together and the money that they've assembled this offseason is pretty substantial. The rumors are that they got about $3 million to spend. And so they got Ballo, and we'll see if they get Carlisle. And then you add Rice to that mix, and all of a sudden you feel pretty good. But none of those guys, like you said, is really good at shooting the three. So and you wonder, if I'm a three-point shooter like a Sejan, I'm thinking, what am I going to Indiana for? They don't shoot the three, and it's not a matter of not being able to, I don't think. Ware was good at it, and Bacco got better at it. Kopp was good at it. That just did the offense. So if I'm a three-point shooter, I think twice about going to Indiana.
Ken Sterling joining us here on the Sports Rush. By the way, is that a fact? The vertical stripes are slimming? Because I may have to change my pant pattern.
I'm hoping so. I've been rocking it for years, Brett.
All right, so let's talk about the latest with the Indianapolis Colts. We're counting down to the draft, and I just saw a mock draft. I think it might have been Peter Schrager who had the Colts actually trading up. Now, I'm not sure if he'd been drinking before he put that mock draft together, but the Colts moving up to get Neighbors from LSU. I know that Odunze is your guy. I like Harrison, but I don't think that there's no way the Colts can get into a position to get him. But what do you think about the Colts being aggressive going up and getting one of these three wideouts?
I don't think it's possible. And I was in the Colts media room yesterday, and kind of somebody in there was taking sort of a straw poll as to what people thought. And there was nobody who was willing to even entertain the notion that Chris Ballard was going to have some kind of psychotic break and all of a sudden start getting aggressive over one guy rather than trading back and being in a position to take any of a bunch of guys that he kind of covets and thinks that they can develop into being a really good player. I don't think that they're going to go get Malik Neighbors, but man, would I, and the reason that Odunze is kind of my guy and not Neighbors is I was sure that Neighbors was going to be taken before Odunze and maybe even before Harrison, because he is just, you watch him play, that's a special human being. And Harrison might be special too, but I love Tariq. Neighbors is just really, really good. And if you put him on the other side from Pittman, all of a sudden, with Jonathan Taylor in the backfield, you got an offense that's got an opportunity to really hum. But I wonder, and you've got Steichen, and Steichen's kind of, he is an offensive guy, a coach with an offensive background, and I think he's earned some trust from Ballard. but I think that they're still going to play it safe. I think that they maybe they take Quinyon Mitchell in the first round, the cornerback out of Toledo, and then in the second round, you hope that somebody you kind of like is going to be able to is going to fall to you, and you get that wide receiver that maybe you don't necessarily covet, but is going to be workmanlike and is going to be a competent replacement maybe for Alec Pierce.
I know when you look at this draft, there's so many external factors. It's not just what you want to do. You know, you can always say trade up and go get him, but you got to find somebody that's willing to trade down to do that. And then the other thing is trading down. You got to find somebody that covets the spot you're in at 15. I don't know if it's a highly coveted spot, but I would assume the Colts would go into this draft thinking there's two or three guys we'd like to see available at 15. Now, is that when the decision comes? Like, if those guys go off the board at, let's say, 9, 11, and 14, is that when they decide to trade down, or do they stick with it and try to get the best player that's available for them at that point?
I think the one way that they stick at 15 is if the one guy that they had graded and it falls to them. The one guy that they coveted, that maybe they would have traded up for, if say, Brock Bowers falls to 15 or Quinyon Mitchell falls to 15, you take that player if that's what you coveted. But if you've got three of the players that you coveted, who are if they're still on the board at 15, or if they're all gone, you may as well trade back. I just don't, like Schrager said, a trade up with the Bears at 9, that's not an easy fit. You know, you've got kind of that point system that assigns point values to the draft level where you're at. How many points, like 10-50 for the 15th overall pick. To move up to 9th, that's about 300 points. And 300 points isn't an easy fit. If you could just kind of go 15 and 46 and go get a guy you absolutely love, you'd do it. And maybe you do that with the Giants at 6, maybe that's an easier fit. I just don't see trading up with the Bears as an easy fit. I think trading back makes sense, but I hate it because that's what they've done for years and years and years. And that's how you wind up with a roster filled with mediocres to the point where when they re-sign their own guys, you know, they re-signed Grover Stewart. They signed DeForest Buckner to an extension. You know, they have brought everybody back, and they're continuing to bring people back, and they're going to talk to Ryan Kelly about an extension. You know, in total, like, you can't argue against any one of those individual decisions. But in total, what are you doing? You're bringing everybody back from a 9-8 team. You're saying that the best way for you to improve is internally coaching these guys up. And with Jonathan Taylor for a full year, with Anthony Richardson for a full year, you hope you're going to be able to see lift that's going to get you to the playoffs and get you to a position where at least you make you got a chance at a run in the postseason to get somewhere meaningful. But it smacks of being way too safe on one hand, and then being like over aggressively safe, if that can be a thing, on the other hand. I mean, it's almost crazy the way he's going to bat for his own guys and not covering himself by acquiring somebody else who's going to help you kind of lift the level of elite play on your roster. It's kind of nutty. I mean, it's an exceptionally risky move while being exceptionally safe. I don't know if that makes sense.
No,
but that's what Ballard is.
I get it totally, Ken. It's like the only way you improve mediocre is to add a little great to it. And if you just keep adding mediocre to mediocre, I know what you come up with. Mediocre. It doesn't change. And that's basically been Ballard.
That's irrefutable.
All right, Kent. It's the obligatory question about Caitlin Clark, because we have to include a question about Caitlin Clark. She's coming to Indiana officially. In fact, she's in Indiana. Being introduced this morning. Here's my question. Has there ever been a player for any of the sports franchises in Indianapolis that has impacted the fan base anywhere close to what Caitlin Clark has impacted this Fever fan base?
Not initially, because I would go back, I'd say Peyton, but you know what? Peyton Manning, there were people when Peyton Manning was selected first overall in 98 who thought they should have gone with Ryan Leaf.
Right.
And there were people who thought that Manning didn't have the arm strength, so there was skepticism about Peyton Manning. There is nothing skeptical about the fan base as it, because she's likable. Caitlin Clark is. She is, she's so many things that people want to watch. She's a great passer. She's a great shooter. She is a genuinely nice person. She says all the right things. She is a star's star in a league bereft of stars, and she's coming to Indy, and this place kind of needs a lift from somebody like Caitlin Clark. So I think she's the perfect antidote for the disease that's plaguing this community.
How many years did Peyton Manning have to play in the NFL before he got an invite to Saturday Night Live? Let's ask that question.
Oh, I wonder how long it was.
I bet it was 9-10 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, probably so. Probably right after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
In February of 07. Yeah, you're exactly right. What a great host. He was very he was surprisingly funny and also surprisingly not fit. Like you looked at his body when he had his shirt off, you're like, "Oh, he must be wearing some kind of those are appendages. Those can't be his." But yes, those were.
He looked like a 1980s baseball player. No, you didn't want to see any of those guys without their shirts on.
John Crux.
yeah, exactly. I mean, you had plenty of them around baseball back then. All right, Kent, got to let you roll, but have a great weekend. We're going to keep tracking what's happening down there in Bloomington. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
You're the greatest. Thanks, Brett.
Appreciate it. Kent Sterling joining us. KentSterling.com. Be sure you check it out. He's got videos that he posts a couple of times a day, and sometimes he even pens an article when he's got some commentary. And, of course, a great follow on Twitter or on X as well, at Kent Sterling. Always enjoy him being on the show. We've got plenty more coming up. Tin Caps struggling with the offense last night. Just didn't have enough of it. Didn't string anything together. Got one big bomb over the left field wall. That was it. Tin Caps quietly lost the game, the opener of the six-game series against the Dayton Dragons last night, 4-1, and they'll get back at it tonight. We'll talk about that and more as we take you up to 6 o'clock. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back final time here on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4-6. Brett Rump, Adam Lundy, and you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Coming up tonight, we've got Tin Caps Baseball. They'll try to turn it around and get a new winning streak started coming up tonight as they'll take on the Dayton Dragons after last night's 4-1 loss. And it'll be Jagger Haynes taking the mound for a second start of the season. Tin Caps and Dayton live coming up at 6:45 with first pitch around 7:05. Also, a reminder that Sunday night, the Pacers and Bucks, game one, and we will have the broadcast for you of the Pacers basketball playoff edition starting on Sunday night at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6:30. Now, we will not have the Tuesday night game due to Tin Caps baseball, and we'll not have the Friday game, game three, but then we'll be back with game four next Sunday, a week from Sunday, from Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Big thanks to Kent Sterling and Shane Alberani for joining the show today. Back tomorrow, 4-6, another edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.